Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yo, technology, what is it all about?
What did I say when I first met with Aravind that was different? Everybody else told him like, oh, well, Google got integrated into browsers, so you should go figure out how to get integrated in browsers. There's no way we win, you know, repeating somebody else's playbook from 25 years ago.
Hello and welcome to Danny in the Valley, your weekly dispatch from behind the scenes and inside the minds of the top people in tech this week. We've got a great show. On the program is friend of the pod, Dmitry Shevelenko, who is the chief business officer of Perplexity.ai, which, as you'll hear, I think is one of the AI startups that maybe, just maybe, will break through amidst the thousands of startups that are bubbling away right now, most of which will not work, but a few will and become very, very, very big. And Perplexity is an interesting one to look at. And it's interesting because they're taking on a little company called Google. So what they have done is they've created a really powerful way to search the web. You can check it out, perplexity.ai, it's free. It's basically a search window, just like Google, and you type in your question, and it just spits out an answer. So it's not 10 blue links, there's no ads. It's using kind of AI technology, large language model technology, to give you what it thinks is the most relevant answer on the internet, along with citations from where that information came from. So just a completely different paradigm from the Google model, which has basically dominated all of our lives over the past 20 years. And this is one of the reasons, this kind of product is one of the reasons why Google is freaking out right now and keeps tripping over its own feet. Because this new AI technology allows you to kind of take a different approach to, you know, basic things like Googling it that we have become so accustomed to. And I can report from experience that, for example, I started trying to use ChatGPT here and there for work on like research and just as a kind of a research assistant. Couldn't use it because it just makes stuff up all the time. Whereas Perplexity, the answers are better. They're citations. Whatever they're doing, it seems to be working. It's really interesting. It's worth checking out. And it's just a fascinating example of a little company using this technology to potentially take on one of the most entrenched, powerful companies on the planet. What's not to like? And Dmitry has done this a couple times before. As you'll hear, he's tried his own startup. And before that, he was at Uber helping to build that up in its early years. And before that, he was at Facebook. So he knows a thing or two about taking on, you know, well-established rivals, big markets, kind of big chunky problems. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. And I think Perplexity is just a cool idea. It's really well executed. And obviously, the odds are stacked against it. Chances are, if you had to bet, it won't work. Or Google will remain Google, and I think Google will always remain Google. But I just think it's an example of this kind of interesting AI frenzy we have entered and doing something that is quite cool, quite different, that maybe, just maybe, move the needle. So we cover all of that and much more. So I will now hand you over to my chat with Dmitry of Perplexity.ai. Enjoy. So first of all, thank you for making the time. As we were saying before we started recording, we met pre-pandemic, and I was doing the story about Uber and how Uber had was like this kind of startup factory, how a bunch of people had learned, been inside this crazy growth company, then come out and launch their own companies. And you had launched your own company, which I want to talk about. But can we talk about what you're doing right now? Because you're no longer doing that company, but you're doing Perplexity, which of all of the AI companies, for me, I feel like 95 out of 100 of these companies that we're seeing right now are probably not going to be around in a few years. It just feels like very dot-com-y. But Perplexity is like, you're like, oh, I get this, and this could be like a very big deal. So what's the story, and how did you get involved? What's the company to kind of take that from the top, I guess?
Well, I'll tie it back to some of the ex-Uber mafia.
Yeah.
So Perplexity's Series A was led by NEA. One of the partners there, Ann Brodesky, was a colleague from Uber. And after she made the investment, she's like, hey, you got to meet this founder, Aravind. There's something special here. And this is like before like Perplexity was on people's radar.
So when was this roughly?
So this was like early summer of last year, which in AI years, that feels like a decade ago.
Yeah, that's like 45 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. but in reality, relatively recent history. And yeah, I met with Aravind a few times. And for a consumer internet startup, the biggest challenge, if you have great technology, is always going to be distribution, right? And I totally think in some ways, the early history of Google was really innovation on how to get people to use Google. So he was trying to, you know, talk to as many informed business people as possible about what's the right strategy here. I think I said a few, you know, things that caught his attention, and we kept chatting. And I started working as an advisor with Perplexity later that summer. During that period, I became hopelessly addicted to the product.
So there was already a product out there in the wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me, you know, for folks that don't know what Perplexity is, it's an AI answer engine. And really the way to think about it is it's the marriage of a search engine with a large language model chat interface. And the somewhat initially contrarian viewpoint of Perplexity was, you know, large language models are actually not that good as a store of knowledge, but what they're really good.
They're all liars.
Yeah. So they hallucinate and they could trick you, but they're actually really good at summarizing and synthesizing information. And so if you kind of combine a real-time search engine that can kind of identify the most useful, reputable, trustworthy sources of information on a topic on the web and run the content of those sites through an LLM really fast in a way that responds to the original question, you can get the best of both worlds. And so the true origin story of Perplexity was it actually was built as an internal tool. When they found the company, they were trying to do something else, and they tried to hire their first employee, and they didn't know how to get health insurance. They didn't know, you know, how to sign an office.
All the kind of like the boring stuff of starting an actual company.
Yeah, the boring stuff. And, you know, these were first-time founders, you know, not like experienced business people. They come from the world of AI research. And so they built a Slack bot that basically coupled together the Bing index and what had just come out in terms of the GPT-3 APIs, and it worked remarkably well. And so it's obvious in hindsight stories of like, okay, there's a powerful merger here of search and LLM. And, you know, they kind of started experimenting more with that, released it as a product. Now we have our own search engine, our own web index, our own ranking system, our own LLMs, right? So you start with stitching together other people's products and APIs. You get a data flywheel going. You understand what really matters to users in the interface. And long story short, you know, 10 million plus MAUs later, we're here.
You're at 10 million monthly users right now.
It's over that, but that was the last reported number.
Right. Yeah. I want to go back a little bit. So Aravind is he a co-founder? There's more than one founder?
There's three co-founders. Right. So Aravind and Dennis, who actually met doing similar types of AI research. So Aravind was a researcher at DeepMind and OpenAI. Dennis was at Meta's AI research lab. And so they had similar topics of research and they knew each other through that. And then the third co-founder, Johnny Ho, you know, Dennis said earlier in his career had worked at Quora and he worked with Johnny there. Johnny is not an AI PhD, but he won the International Competitive Coding Olympics when he was 17. So
as you do. I was in the finals. I didn't quite make it, you know, it was quarterfinals.
So my dad joke when I joined the company was I raised the average age by 5 and lowered the average IQ by 5 as well. So incredibly stacked founding team.
And how old are the founders? Are they like 20s, 30s?
Yeah, like late 20s, mid 30s.
So when did Perplexity actually launch as a product you and me and Joe Public could use?
So the official launch to the moms and dads of the employees and founders was December of 22. And so that's when it was, you know, its own website. And yeah, kind of a lot of growth steadily through last year.
So that's December 22. That's basically a month after ChatGPT, like the kind of the Big Bang moment, right? When ChatGPT has launched, everybody's like, oh my God, this thing is the thing, right? This is going to kind of... So clearly they're working on that. What were they trying to do when they stumbled upon Perplexity as the product?
There's a lot of early concepts, but it was basically trying to do large language model for SQL. So like imagine being able to actually like search Twitter using an LLM or search internal data using an LLM. So it's more of initially a B2B use case.
Got you.
Search has always been something that has fascinated Aravind in particular, co-founder and CEO. His entrepreneurial hero, which is not the most common choice, is actually Larry Page. When he was a researcher at DeepMind, he came from humble beginnings. And so he was literally somewhat stealthily living in the Google DeepMind London office because his apartment wasn't that nice.
I love it. So just like shaving in the bathroom, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. One of those stories. And then Google has really nice libraries in those offices as well. And so like in the late evening, he like just like ingested all of the like history of early Google. And I think that was a inspiration point for him.
He was in London?
Yeah, he was at the DeepMind. He was as part of his PhD program. He was doing work there.
Why did you join? What was the thing that we're like, actually, this is a kind of a rocket ship I want to try to get on?
So I think part of it is just the same feels as when I use Uber as a consumer. And I'm like, okay, I'm probably going to be using this the rest of my life. And again, that kind of hopelessly addicted feeling of like, I just saw, you know, searches that I was previously doing in Google. I was naturally gravitating towards Perplexity, not because it was like, you know, it's hard to unlearn those habits, but the quality of the answer was just so much better. I was getting to what I wanted faster that it just became habitual. And that was powerful. So the product is powerful, but what really drew me to the company is the relentless rate of iteration and shipping. So we ship to production nearly every single day. And the kind of mantra is 1% better every day. And obviously you do the math and you know, you're kind of 30 times better at the end of the year. You know, you can have people who are very strong academically and can kind of do cutting edge AI research. You can have people who are entrepreneurs. It's very rare to meet a team that kind of had both of those, you know, well out of the normal distribution and being excellent at both. I think lastly, it's just the raw ambition of the challenge of like taking on Google and rethinking what nobody thought was a thing that could change. I mean, I just, yeah, I love the idea of the big challenge, right?
Well, and that's why I wanted to have you on because, as I said, it's like one of the ones that I'm like, actually, this, and I don't know whether it will be Perplexity or some other company. I'm sure you guys aren't the only ones trying this. You can tell me different. But for me, it's like, you know, it's like the battle for the front page of the internet. For everybody, for 2 decades, it's been Google. And over that time, that experience has gotten steadily worse, like a little bit at a time, right? And so now when you put in a search, it's like there's the first 8 links are ads. And then you get to the organic search results below that. But even so, I still Google pretty much everything. But this is the first thing where I'm actually like, I feel myself being like, let me just check Perplexity real quick. And I get a better answer, and I'm just like, oh. And you start to see cracks in like 2 decades of learned behavior, which I find fascinating. And especially when you look at what Google's trying to do and kind of stepping all over its own toes and whatnot, it feels like this is kind of almost like a Harvard Business School case study in the making of just like the innovator's dilemma. They have everything to lose. They're trying to figure out how to do this AI thing. And then you guys, you're a small, scrappy team. You're like, well, we're just going to do this thing because we're starting from scratch. And it feels like it's potentially like a better, just a better mousetrap and a better front page of the internet.
I wish I could explain it as well as you just did. I mean, that's exactly it. Large language models have enabled is a transition from a links economy to an answers economy, right? And it's not that Google can't build incredible technology that's, you know, similar to what we've created. It's that they can't scale it without cannibalizing, you know, the world's most successful business.
Like the most successful business in the history of capitalism.
Yeah. And you know, they're victims of their success because, you know, they could pull the Band-Aid, right? They could like take a 30 to 40%, you know, short to medium term hit in revenue, but the house of cards would fall, right? Like mass employee exodus. Like it's just, there's too much caught up in the stock price, and the stock price is very sensitive to, you know, hitting earnings targets. And there's just a lot of momentum there that's hard for them to shift. And our alpha is, you know, blank slate and focus, right? Like this is the only thing we wake up worrying about. You know, we're starting with a very different business model where, you know, we have a free version of the product and then a premium subscription. You know, at some point we will have a version of advertising Perplexity. It won't be AdWords, but what is, you know, what does advertising look like in a answers centric economy versus links, right? And I think that's kind of the question we think about. That said, like sources are essential to the Perplexity experience, right? We actually show you the source.
Well, that's one of the good things, right? You have links to the source material that you're quoting.
Yeah, because honestly, like if you don't know where the information is coming from as a user, how can you trust it? That actually comes from, you know, the founder's academic background, where when you're doing peer-reviewed research, you can't have a single line item in your paper that doesn't link back to some other, you know, piece of research that was also peer-reviewed or some original piece of data, right? And so that's why line by line, we show you where the information comes from. But even in the user interface, giving you the context on, you know, the nature of the sources, that's important. That's going to determine the trustworthiness of the answer. You know, that's a big part of the user experience and a big part of the utility in terms of that, the you know, can you actually go and make decisions based off the answer you just consumed?
Right. Can you give a kind of a brief history of you? Because I think it'll inform, especially when you talk about business model and taking on the established order, so to speak. I think it'll be illustrative. So what'd you do before this?
Yeah, so I graduated undergrad with the most practical of degrees, anthropology. Got to stand up for the liberal arts. You know, was fortunate that, you know, Facebook, this is 2008, was just kind of entering a hypergrowth mode and joined them straight out of school.
Why would Facebook hire an anthropology major?
Well, so this is the funny thing is the job I thought I was getting hired for was, you know, they called it user operations, which at the time was a new role. And it was kind of pitched to me like, oh, you'll get to study user behavior, you know, apply your, you know, right, kind of, you know, cultural anthropology skills, like, you know, generate insights. What it ended up being is, you know, them hiring a bunch of, you know, Ivy League grads to reset passwords for users. So literally it was a customer support job. And yeah, just to give, you know, for some of the younger folks in your audience, the state of the art, you know, technology was, you know, if you needed to reset your password, there was a, you know, an Ivy League grad on the other end of that transaction pressing a button on your behalf so that you would get it. But, you know, the proverbial, you know, Sheryl Sandberg, you know, line of like, if there's a rocket ship, don't ask what seat, just get on. And so it was fortunate as kind of Facebook was growing and launched their online advertising business was kind of, you know, early in that, back when Zynga was 10% of Facebook's ad revenue.
Farmville.
So a lot of history lessons. But yeah, was there from 80 million users to 800 million users, which is great early in your career to get a taste of hypergrowth. even if you're, you know, really a passenger on the ship as opposed to the driver. Then went to, I always had a personal passion for news and media. Went to Pulse, which was one of the early mobile news readers that was acquired by LinkedIn, was a product manager at LinkedIn, and then saw that a lot of the smartest folks from Facebook were all going to this relatively new company called Uber, and then joined Uber as a director of business development. There are a lot of things there, driver business development, the API program. But how we connected was I was part of leading the company into multimodal transportation. So yeah, bikes and scooters, public transit, so all the non-ride hailing modes, and got to know that ecosystem well, and things like the jump bikes. After a good run at Uber, spent a year as a full-time advisor working with a bunch of different mobility founders, everything from autonomous helicopters to a bunch of the scooter companies to mobile parking, and really, you know, became obsessed with like the early stage of a company. Became a founder myself of a robotic startup called Tortoise. We did a lot of things, you know, started actually with scooter robotics, but then delivery robots, mobile vending. Unfortunately, as the zero interest rate phenomenon subsided, we did not survive.
Was it a kind of like, because you guys raised some money, right?
Yeah, we over 8 billion, yeah.
Were you one of the, I think last year was something like 1,500 startups kind of died because it was just like venture capitalists were like, the economy is terrible. We're closing our checkbooks.
Every startup dies for a different reason. So I don't know if it's, you know, and ultimately I think the truest expression of that is when like the founders like just like lose faith themselves. That's when it really dies. And I felt, you know, where we hit an inflection point was even if people were willing to write another check, but like, I didn't have confidence that we could get to a meaningful milestone. And it's like, we didn't feel the conviction to kind of keep going in the current market environment. And so we wound down shop early last year.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How was that? Because I've never started a company myself, but I've had a lot of people on this podcast who have. Oftentimes, you know, chances are against you. Most of the time, it's not going to work. But actually making that decision to wind it down, what was that like? Was that relief? Was it disappointment? Was it sadness? Were you elated? Was it all of it? Like, what was that like?
I think it's not like one decision. It like happens over some period of time, right? And obviously, as a founder, you're the most aware of like the true status of your prospects. And so certainly it was disappointment, but in our case, we pivoted the thing twice. Like there wasn't much a sense of like, oh, if only we had done X, Y, or Z. We did X, we did Y, we did Z. You know, we threw everything we had at it. The second guessing is really like, were we the right team to go after a hardware and robotics opportunity? I mean, everything is hard, but those have a much higher difficulty level. And so I think that's the part that I would like challenge. But once we started the journey, there weren't too many. And we had like COVID hit us hard because we were, you know, initially had a micromobility focus.
Oh, is that why you pivoted to delivery robots?
Yeah. When people stop moving goods becomes more important. Yeah. But I think part of it is also a big part of the team wanted to keep going. You know, we could have raised more money, but part of it is like keeping it going for the sake of keeping up optics isn't right. And the thing I was most sensitive to is for people earlier in their careers, like I didn't want them to spend more time on a thing that wasn't going to make it just because we didn't have like the ability to admit failure.
Right.
I think giving people time back is important. And so that was part of the decision as well.
The last iteration, their delivery robots, what did they actually look like?
They look somewhat futuristic. I mean, I'll send a picture. You can include in the show notes.
Yeah.
Actually, the very last iteration was a mobile vending robot.
Oh, vending machine on wheels.
Exactly. Yeah. People would rather buy stuff from it because they were bigger, so they get generate a lot of attention. I mean, funny enough, if our timing had been a little bit different and GPT-3 had been available, there probably could have been a version of it that was super interactive where like you talk with the robot.
Right.
And like, I think truism about startups that just always reinforces itself is timing is everything.
Yes.
Because robotics actually now is having a whole new wave of life, right? I'm sure you saw the big fundraise for Figure. And so I think the fact that you have more conversational voice abilities is unlocking use cases there.
It is interesting. I was just looking at, so Figure, they're trying to make a bipedal robot. They just raised $675 million, which is a crazy amount of money. And I saw their demo, and demos are demos. Like, I don't get too excited about demos because the distance between demo and real world application is very long. It's being basically run on ChatGPT, so you can kind of talk to this robot and it responds and is quite dexterous and it can do things where you're like, oh, that's actually quite interesting, kind of marrying those two things together. To your point around like a vending machine on wheels, if it could also talk to you and respond to you.
Answer your questions about the products it's selling, you know, like, I mean, basically be a hype man for its own inventory. It was interesting timing there, but I have to say I'm very happy with kind of the way that the ball bounced, and we're having a lot of fun at Perplexity.
I'm curious because you were at Facebook going from 80 million to 800 million. You were at Uber when they were like just growing like a weed, and also kind of crashing through barriers, often very recklessly, in cities around the world. And here you are, you're a small startup. How many people are at Perplexity?
Just under 50.
50 people. And, you know, Google is worth $2 trillion and has 180,000 people. And you're basically being like, no, we've come up with a better way. When you think about the similarities of like that kind of going from nothing and going after like this huge prize, is there something that you saw in Facebook and Uber that you see here in terms of the dynamics where the challenges are how to navigate it?
Yeah, there's this concept that it's much easier to recruit people to go after a very hard, big problem than for like more of a middle size difficulty problem. And I think that's what is inspiring here, right? Is like, sure, like it's crazy, right? Like who thinks you can take on Google? But that's super motivating. Like you wake up every day. And I think the thing that's particularly motivating is like, and this is easier actually in consumer internet startups, is random people you meet, you say you work at Perplexity, they're like, oh, I use that. And like, I love it. And so that kind of gives you, you know, fuel to the fire. And for all the disadvantages, you know, it's much more fun to work at a 50 person company than a 180,000 person company. You can make decisions faster. Partners like working with you more because you can make decisions faster and there's no bureaucracy. It's intimidating, but frankly, like balls bounce different ways. I'd be at a bigger company, but the excitement of getting to challenge big obstacles and work with a really small, dedicated team, it's intoxicating.
I mean, you're kind of playing with house money, right? Like you're supposed to fail. So if you win, if you don't fail, then it's like, oh my God, this is amazing. But it's kind of like, the risk is, it feels like everybody already understands the risk going in because the thing you're trying to do is so hard.
I think the ability to take risks is a huge unlock. Yeah, I mean, Google with Gemini, the challenge they have is a function of the internal bureaucracy. They over-engineered this thing, and now solving the over-engineering is crippled by the bureaucracy. We're making mistakes here too, don't get me wrong, but our ability to kind of adapt from them, learn from them, yeah, of course, correct. It's just faster iteration cycles. Are you familiar with the concept of like OODA loops? It comes from like the U.S. Air Force. So observe, orient, decide, act. So it's just like a basic like workflow for decision making. And it's all about clock speed, right? You just want to, as quickly as possible, make actions and then observe what happens, you know, reorient yourselves, make a new decision, and just keep repeating that cycle, right? And so that's where this whole shipping every day, 1% better every day, it's not just about incremental improvement, but it's about, you know, in an iterative way, making better and better decisions and not being crippled by the inability to make decisions.
I have two questions. One is around business model, because I'm thinking when you said you guys have a subscription model, then there'll be an ad-based tier. But I'm thinking of my own industry with like the media, which is also, you know, just having a terrible time with all these closures, et cetera. But I think about, you know, there was the early days of the internet, everybody just decided, okay, we're going to put up a website and give it all away for free. And then there's been the slow reversal of like, actually to pay for this thing that has value, you need to pay for it. You need to ask people to pay for it. Do you guys have a sense now of, especially with this kind of new generation of tools like the one you're building, what that balance looks like? Is this something that is basically people are going to have to pay for to get information they trust, especially when everything is fake and AI can generate anything like at the drop of a hat from nothing? How are you guys thinking about how that will work as the business evolves?
Yeah. So I think right now and forever, the vast majority of our users will be free users. It's not that they're getting biased content and the paid users are getting, you know, the unfiltered stuff. There's certain products and features like our Pro Search, which does a deeper search, ask clarifying questions to help you get to a better answer. Those are more premium features, the ability to attach files, the ability to pick which large language model is doing the summarizing for you. You can either use ours or we have a multi-platform model, right? So we let you pick Claude 3 or GPT-4 our own model, which is optimized. So, and now we have, you know, searching by voice, image generation, which are pro features. But yeah, I mean, I think the idea that most people on the internet for search will pay for it is probably not the right starting point. Most people will want the free version of the product, and the free version is very good. What's really interesting about Perplexity is something like 40% of all queries come from the related questions that we show below an answer.
Yeah, because just so people who haven't used it, you ask a question, it generates an answer. Like I was doing a piece on Mark Zuckerberg. I was like, what are the names of Mark Zuckerberg's daughters? And it said, these are the names. And then below that, there's like three suggested questions that are like, what are the ages of Mark Zuckerberg's daughters? Which I also need to know. So I click on that and then it generates the answer.
So if you kind of put yourself in the shoes a year from now of a brand advertiser, and we have this story of like, hey, people aren't just using Perplexity to get an initial answer. Like we're able to take them down this rabbit hole of knowledge, right? And once you're curious about one thing, it reminds you all these other things you could be curious about as well. What we're committing to though, is we're never gonna do the AdWords thing of showing you an ad above your answer. And we're never gonna bias the answer itself based off of what an advertiser pays us, right? Like, so what we represent as the answer, that'll always be the same answer, you know, regardless of who our advertising partners are. I don't see that something that I think others will experiment with that as a form of advertising, but that's like the fastest way to lose user trust.
Yeah.
What becomes interesting again is once somebody's been satisfied with the initial answer, they're going further, you know, suggesting other questions they can ask, right? And I think that's where we see really rich opportunities for advertising down the road. It's not an immediate focus, but within the next few quarters, I think we're going to start experimenting there and developing our own, you know, intuition about what is both useful for users and good for advertisers. I think it's worth calling out that in the early years of Google AdWords, people actually preferred seeing a result page that had the AdWords ads without them, because there weren't too many of them. There was just one ad per page. And they usually like had good, you know, alignment with the intention
relevant,
of the user.
Yeah.
And so it was like a shortcut. As long as you hold yourself to a firm red line of not like, you know, overloading it, there's definitely a way to make advertising accretive to the experience. And yeah, that's going to be what we focus on.
On the Gemini example, so for most people probably know, but for those who don't, Gemini is kind of Google's multimodal AI that they rolled out, and then it was quickly and clearly a disaster, because you'd ask it a question and it was kind of so tuned to not offend anyone that it kind of offended everybody. So if you asked, if it was like, you know, show me a picture of the founding fathers, and it was like a random Asian man in a, like a wig, you know, or kind of like from back in the day. And they're clearly struggling with that. But when I think about, like, when you guys, what do you guys optimize for? And how do you think about, because what Google is trying to avoid is kind of being culturally insensitive, offending people, mining information that might be, you know, exacerbating certain inequalities or racism, whatever it may be. How do you guys, when you guys are, you know, tuning your model, creating your model, what is your approach? Because they're clearly trying to solve something, and they got it very, very wrong. I'm just wondering how you guys think about it.
I think part of it is we're a fundamentally different use case than Gemini. Like, Gemini is about creative brainstorming, right?
Right.
At our core, we're a knowledge-centric company, and it's about, you know, giving people the best information and most reliable knowledge on a given topic. The bias that is reflected in a Perplexity answer is not the bias of our model. It's the bias of the sources, you know, that we're using to kind of extract. And so I think, you know, that's where we're, you know, putting a lot of work in that ranking and the trust and reputation of the sources. You know, for example, we don't use Quora and Medium as, you know, sources, because they tend to have bias in them and bad information. So I think that's kind of determining the best, most reliable sources. That's where we see like the core work on our end. But, you know, it's at some level, it's actually on the end consumer, the end user, to have their own viewpoint on what sources to trust and what sources not to trust, right? And like, there's, as much as we want to believe that there is an objective truth, trying to over-engineer towards that, but also, like, you know, it's not our job to like police the types, you know, there's certain questions we won't answer, but we don't moralize our users of like, right, oh, you should be asking this question.
What kind of questions won't you answer?
I mean, there's some examples on, you know, Twitter of like, if you're asking for like, you know, trying to prompt the model to say something like the Holocaust was a good thing, you know, like the right, we have the awareness to kind of, you know, avoid obvious kind of moral lapses.
Yeah.
And also, if there's no trustworthy source on the internet that is responsive to a question, we'll just say, you know, that we couldn't find sources that respond to this, right?
That's a dangerous thing though, right? To basically give an I don't know answer.
Most of the knowledge that could exist does not exist, right? And certainly of the knowledge that exists in the world, most is not like, doesn't exist in written form. A lot of it lives in our brains, right? And so I think that's actually something we're getting, you know, trying to think about is like, what are almost like social redirects when there's, you know, questions that don't have answers, like who may have the answer that's a person.
Right.
That's not necessarily the information, right? And, you know, we don't have the answer to the right way to implement that, but I think that's a way to go there.
But it sounds like you're trying to orient as much as possible around, like, you know, you ask a question, we're going to give you what we think is the most clear fact-based answer, and here are the you know, citations that you can kind of double check the work, basically.
Exactly. And it's more like, here are the sources, and we like do the work for you of like pulling out the relevant thing, yeah, from those sources, but like empowering you to go, you know, dive further, assess the validity of the source for yourself. You tell me if I'm wrong, but like there is a similarity to kind of how, you know, journalism works too,
yeah,
you know, where it's like ultimately like, you can't just, you know, unless you're making it clear it's your opinion, you can't just put something in there without having, yeah, some attribution to a source. And you know, we borrow from that.
Yeah, it's a bit like you're kind of taking almost an editorial approach to the internet. You know what I mean? But you're kind of saying like, there's this vast ocean of data. You ask a question, we're going to give you the one that we think is the best, the most relevant, and the most correct, basically. It's the kind of an algorithmic editorial choice. It'll be interesting to see if and when you guys get drawn into the whole content moderation wars of this. That feels like something that's coming. I mean, I don't think you guys have to worry about it yet, but if it goes well and you guys get big, I'm sure people will start picking apart things and kind of be like, well, how is this the right answer? Or should you have said this? Or, you know, what's the, How did you create your algorithm to do that, et cetera, et cetera. It's, if there's a lot of meaty questions, I think, kind of baked in to what you guys are trying to do that, again, I don't think you have to solve them today, but I could see that down the line.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the thing that we're always investing in is that, you know, trying to be better and better about what are those trustworthy and reputable sources, but not editorialize on top of those sources, right? Like we need to have fidelity to that source material and not apply, like there's inherently bias in every source, right? Us injecting our own bias on top of it is not a useful contribution.
It's a bias all the way down.
Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely a major area of focus for us.
Lastly, before I let you go, I had a question. You mentioned voice and being able to ask questions, just ask verbally. If you could put like your hardware hat back on, I think one of the most interesting kind of aspects of all of this, which is kind of feels like a bit out there in the distance, but I know a lot of different companies are working on it, is kind of the next iteration of the device and how we use it in a world where AIs can understand us. We can just ask questions in natural language. They respond. You can start to use voice, all of this stuff. Have you guys been in touch with any of these kind of this next generation of companies who are trying to like, while you are trying to replace Google, they're trying to replace the iPhone. They're trying to come up with a AI-centered device that looks and feels and works differently than the phone.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the Rabbit, which was announced at CES, but they actually did an announcement with us that they're using our model, our API, to power real-time answers. There's also Brilliant, which is making AR glasses that are like see-through. They're using our APIs for again, that, you know, what we're really good is the real-time thing, right? This gotcha. Marriage of, you know, search that unlocks the real-time web and then summarizing it really fast. And with high fidelity using the LLM. So we love devices like that. I think this is going to be a rich area of exploration, like everything from like some remote controls for TVs. They have like primitive voice capabilities. And historically, it was all about action, like, oh, watch this show. And it never worked that well. But now there's this ability to actually get knowledge, right? Get information as opposed to, you know, directing these voice devices to take a certain action.
You can be like, ask your TV what's on right now. What do you think I'd like based, you know, and it'll know what I've watched over the past year.
Yeah. As opposed to like, go to channel 34 and then it takes you to channel 37, right? Like, I think that's where we're, you know, a role that we see ourselves playing. And that's part of why we opened up our platform, you know, the model we developed, this online LLM, as an API to make all kinds of, you know, device OEMs be able to access it. And we're just scratching the surface there.
Fascinating.
And that's, in some ways, that's our, you know, going back to the origin of like, you know, what did I say when I first met with Aravind that was different? Everybody else told him like, oh, well, Google got integrated into browsers, so you should go figure out how to get integrated in browsers. And there's no way we win, you know, repeating somebody else's playbook from 25 years ago. Whereas some of these new devices, like who knows which ones take off, like, you know, Rabbit could be amazing. You know, we don't know. But making sure that whatever the frontier form factors are and entry points to getting information, that we're part of that experience, that's going to be a priority for us.
It's a really interesting time. It feels like the most interesting time for the internet in a long time, or technology generally, because you just have a lot of things happening at once.
Just staying on top of all the AI news, you know, can feel like a full-time job. I don't know if you saw like Inflection, two of the co-founders just left to join Microsoft to lead AI there.
I did not see that. Oh, wow.
You know, so it's a lot of developments, a lot of hype.
Ton of hype.
If our alpha is focused, it's like being aware of all the cutting edge research, knowing how to incorporate it into our products faster than others, but also like using the insights we have from what our users are doing in Perplexity and building around that and kind of, you know, having our own blinders on in terms of, you know, what the true north is, that's going to be important too.
And that was all the time we have. I want to thank Dimitri for taking the time. I want to thank you all for listening, for the ratings, for the reviews, for telling your friends, telling your neighbors, telling your enemies, your frenemies, and everyone in between about this Very fine podcast. I will be writing, and I'm writing a bunch of stuff in the paper this weekend, so you should just buy one or log in, subscribe, pay for good journalism, please. I'll also be on Twitter at Danny Fortson. You can email me, danny.fortson@sunday-times.co.uk. That is it for me this week. Thank you, as always, and we'll be back next week with another episode. Till then, bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.